ain't never seen no talking with me, nothing. I'm just about that action, boss.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your host, Derek Simon, who is also all about that action, boss, as we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. Also, a great visit from Aaron Merriman. He is a harness driver. First harness driver I've ever interviewed, actually, which is nuts because I've followed harness racing forever. But Aaron Merriman will be on the show. And also Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com as we talk about the Super Bowl. But first, there are a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're going to remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can't. Yes.
Well, American Pharoah may be gone from the racing scene, but Frosted, the horse that many people feel defeated American Pharoah in the Travers by going with him early, is running as a four-year-old, and in fact, he ran this morning in Dubai in the Al Maktoum Challenge, race number two. Here's the way it went.
Munassa, three-quarters of a length in front at the 1,000 metres peg. Frosted is second, Gold City third, Prayer for Relief, Anekaway running fourth. Out Nowy in the centre being niggled at, Faulkner on the rail, Special Fighter deep, then Mind That Boy and Leal is being stoked up at the tail of the field. 800 metres in 50 flat. Munassa, a half in front. Frosted, closing the gap with 600 metres left to run. Prayer for Relief has been three wide throughout. Gold City on the rail, and then Faulkner at the head of the others, coming around the turn as Munassa is joined by the Grey Frosted. They lead by a little more than a length of the Gold City on the rail. Prayer for Relief drops back to fourth, but Frosted went to the front 250 metres out. Gold City's followed the fence into second spot, and that pair are getting away. The pair are getting away, but the leader's getting away from the second. He's drawing clear, the big Grey, and he's back in a big, big way. Frosted, an impressive winner of round two of the Maktoum Challenge from Gold City. Photo third, Faulkner and Munassa. Then Prayer for Relief, Special Fighter, Leal, Mind That Boy, and Al Nowy.
You know, this is one thing I wish that American announcers would do. I love the niggled at. He's being niggled at the eighth pole. Can he make a run? I said race two. Obviously, that was round two. These are all prep races for the World Cup. Of course, this sets up a very interesting potential matchup between Frosted and California Chrome. So very, very exciting stuff happening in Dubai. I have some preliminary pace figures for this race. And the one thing that's always frustrating to me is just how slow they go early. Now, they time from the opening of the gate to the best of my understanding. So you're going to have slower early splits. But my pace figures kind of take that into account, at least to a certain degree. As far as the, well, I won't get into the details there, but a plus three early speed ration on my scale, that's pretty slow. That's like a turf figure. And it's one of the reasons why I believe that a lot of horses who train over there that come to America for the Kentucky Derby don't do well. Because in the Kentucky Derby, the average ESR is about a minus 10. And you can really look at that as lengths. The negative figures are better, quicker. The positive figures, obviously, slower. So you've got, between this race and the average Kentucky Derby, about a 13-length difference at the half call. Of course, the race is in Dubai in meters, but it's pretty applicable. Some really bad news, at least to me. Pinnacle Racecourse was demolished. The failed $50 million horse racing track in suburban Detroit. And I've got some audio on that as well.
I'm a construction worker. Ah!
Ah! So that's how it went down in Michigan this morning. Actually, I make light of it, but it truly is kind of sad. I remember when Longacres closed down, and it stood really for many years as an OTB. It was bought by the Boeing company and then was finally demolished. But I remember going there once, and of course I grew up in Seattle, and it was just so sad to see what had been such a hub. Now, I don't think that was ever true of Pinnacle Race Course, but it's always sad to see these tracks go by the wayside. So Pinnacle Race Course is no more. I thought I had one other thing here to tell all of you. Yes, the champion sprinter, more bad news, champion sprinter La Verdad has been retired. She was a really hard hitter, a horse that ran often, ran very, very well. She has now been retired. We're going to come right back and talk to a guy who is not retired. In fact, he's crazy in terms of his schedule. Aaron Merriman joins me next. Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. Clue, it's probably not going to be P. Diddy, but he's on the list of betting options. And if you're a racing fan like me, you'll love the daily menu and special prop bets. Thoroughbred Racing, check. International Racing, check. Greyhound Racing, check. Harness Racing, check. Generous Rebates, checkmate. USRacing.com also has a wide variety of casino games as well. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, back to your host. While he's still sober, here's Derek.
I'm now pleased to be joined by Aaron Merriman. He is a harness driver, and he is certifiably crazy. We're talking as he is taking a trip, 270 miles round trip to the Meadows. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing very good. A little tired today.
Yeah, I can imagine. Tell me about this. And I got to tell you, when I was younger, I always thought of the life of being a truck driver. And I thought there are certain aspects of that that I like, except I don't think I could ever drive a truck. You're literally living that lifestyle in addition to all the driving you're doing. How does that play on you? You know, I know you're 37 years old. Does it get tiring?
Yeah, it definitely gets tiring, you know, but, you know, when you have a little bit of success, it's not as bad, but when you have a bad day, it's really grueling, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's probably typical of a lot of professions. It's great when it's going well. And things have been going very well for you. I understand, like, less than a month ago, you won your 7,000th race. You average about 600 wins a year. Tell me what got you interested in the sport of harness racing.
My father, he's a driver trainer still. Him and my uncle bought me a horse, you know, to try to, like, not necessarily get me interested, probably just kind of, like, make me do something. At the time, and I was still in high school, really wasn't totally interested. I liked watching my dad drive and things like that. But, you know, I drove a race till I was like 20 years old, I think. It took me a little while, but once I went to speed, you know, I was pretty addicted.
Hey, Aaron, tell me a little bit about how it works. Now, I am a harness fan, but I basically grew up with the thoroughbreds. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the weight, because that's not something that's reported in harness racing. Of course, in thoroughbred racing, many consider it to be a big factor. What's the weight range? How much do you weigh? And what's the weight range with guys and girls who drive?
I weigh around 190. I'm 5'11", close to 5'11". I think it's being a harness driver with the race bikes and, you know, technology, your weight doesn't really make much difference. You know what I mean? The way the bikes sit, you know, the angles and things like that. That's my personal opinion. It doesn't seem to affect me, but there's some guys that are smaller, probably 150, but they're a lot shorter also. You're not going to see a guy that's 5'11 weighing that, you know, that
absolutely
little, I think it's as long as you're, you know, fit and comfortable, you know what I mean, with your body and things like that or whatever. It's just like any athlete, you know, their weight might fluctuate, but they can carry, you know, extra 20 pounds, you know, just as well, or they can, you know, or they're a thinner, you know, but I don't think weight plays much difference. If it does, maybe, I don't know if I'd win any more races, you know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm the biggest driver, but I would have to say I'm a bigger driver, per se.
Well, yeah, and I kind of like that because I feel like racing is one sport, thoroughbred racing is one sport that really hasn't adapted to the changing times. I mean, people are bigger now. And yeah, I can't imagine you, like, you know, being a thoroughbred jockey having to weigh 120 pounds. It's like, you're right. The career's over at that point. Tell me a little bit about the strategy, because this is always interesting to me in harness racing. And I read an article where you talked about being a little bit more aggressive maybe than some other drivers, which I appreciate, because I think with harness racing, so much of it is the positioning and making sure that you're going to have a clear lane once your horse is ready for that run. How do you go about assessing that? Do you, like some thoroughbred jockeys do, look at the past performances and try to determine, okay, well, this horse is going to be here, so I want to be tucked in third? Or how do you go about the strategical process of getting ready for a harness race?
You know, a lot of it bases on where I'm racing. You know, all the tracks play a little bit different. Like Northfield Park is, you know, my mainstay, and also the Meadows, and they play the exact opposite. So it really is like me starting a race at the Meadows really made me a better driver. But the advantages, just as the jock would say, of racing with, you know, at the same tracks every day, you kind of know the horses and you kind of know the drivers and their, you know, idiosyncrasies and things like that. But I always kind of like look, you know, if I've never drove the horse and see what kind of trips the horse has been going, you know, you kind of look by the program. And I try to do the opposite if it isn't racing, but you know, change something up. And I always like go down burn. You know, I'd rather give the horse a chance to win, even though it might mean I'm driving myself out of a check sometimes, you know, just overusing them. But I'm kind of guy that wants to, I want to have a shot at it, you know. And I'm sure the gamblers, you know, sometimes they like it, or some of them know if they really know racing, they, oh, he really overdrove that horse. But I'd rather have a shot at winning rather than being tucked in and being a strong fourth.
Speaking of the gamblers, this is one of the things I saw on your Facebook page that I just loved, because first of all, I don't know, you know, some people you just get a read on and you just strike me as just being a good guy. And I'm reading this, you know, this note that was sent to you about your driving abilities. And this guy, let's just say he was less than impressed, and he talks about he can't understand how you're a driver. And you talk in this post, on this Facebook post, about how you get several of these things. How do you deal with those, Aaron? Because I got to tell you, just a kind of an aside, a story, you know, of my own career. I wrote about stem cell stocks once. It was a business article, okay? So it was about an investment. I had guys writing me. One guy literally told me that I killed his mother, apparently because I wrote about these stocks. I've had lots of things like that. And it gets to a certain point where it's so over the top, it's funny. Do you find humor in these things, or how do you respond to fans that make some of these wild accusations?
There's definitely humor in some of them. And, you know, I just thought to myself the other day, when I get the message, I'm in the driver's room with, you know, my fellow drivers, like, you know what, guys, when we get these, let's just put them on Facebook. I said, or let's just post them and maybe to kind of like, you know, open up some people's eyes. You mean, like, say, listen, we don't, you know, we get ridiculed a lot. And that was one of the nicer ones, because a lot of them are way meaner. You know what I mean? Like you said,
you
killed your mother. But like, I mean, there's a couple guys that are notorious for doing it. You know what I mean? That they hide behind the screen name. This gentleman that sent me one did not necessarily hide behind a screen name. But I mean, I don't really take it that way. I don't like it. You know what I mean? It'd be like me going to tell him, say, this guy's a business, you know, advisor or whatever. I don't go to his job and saying, oh my gosh, you did this, that, and the other, you know. I mean, we're out there doing the best we can, and we're very, very competitive, you know, and, you don't want to, especially if it strikes a nerve, if you really thought you should have won the race too, or something like that, or whatever, and the horse just didn't race well, you know, and you know about horses. A lot of times you don't know if they bleed till after the race, or if they're sick till after the race, or if they're lame till after the race. And as drivers, we don't know what went on during the week. And I'm just thinking to myself, just like the great thing, if how many more races would I win? You know, if these people are, you know, the things these people say, it's just amazing. It amazes me.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, because I remember once, and it was James Quinn, who I like very, very much. And he was talking about the Breeders' Cup sprint of several years back. And I'm going to forget the horse's name, but the horse goes out and sets like a 21 opening quarter and wires the race. And I remember James Quinn saying, you know, if he'd gotten pressure, it might have been different. And I'm thinking, yeah, but who's going to pressure him going 21 seconds? And I've often thought with, you know, because for me, I, as a handicapper, want to see a jockey, a driver, do what I think is tactically sound. I don't like when, let's say, in the thoroughbred game, there's a confirmed front runner, and you decide just on a whim to take it from dead last, you know, provided there's no problem with the break or whatever. But I often do wonder, okay, well, maybe the horse just didn't have anything, and he's trying to do the best he can, and I think a lot of players forget about that aspect. On that subject of, you know, kind of knowing your horse, are there times when you know, hey, just, you know, maybe just in the warm-ups, hey, this horse just doesn't have it today, and you change your strategy?
Yeah, you know, sometimes you can feel like the horse, if they're just, like, not woke up like they usually are. If you do something, I mean, everybody's got their own little thing that they do, and they say, just say, you know, you touch them here, touch them there, and they're not really responding, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, I've seen 3 to 5. I don't think it's going to be as good, you know. Sometimes you might say, listen, you might need a little bit better trip, or even the conditions, you know, if it's muddy or if it's windy, you know, sometimes you know, or speed's not carrying, you know, it's like I said, the meadows, you know, it's very rare that you can just, you know, I mean, really, really overdrive a horse and have them win, you know what I mean? And, or just really drive them overly aggressive. So yeah, absolutely, it does change at times. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but my job is not necessarily to protect the gambler's money. It's get the most money out of each horse.
Do you ever have disputes with other drivers? You know, we've seen some fairly famous cases on the thoroughbred side. I remember one Breeders' Cup where Calvin Burrell was very, very upset. Do you ever have those situations where, you know, you go in after the race and say, hey, dude, that was a real douche move that you just pulled out there?
I personally do not. And that's one thing that I take pride in. If I do anything on the track, it is my doing. If I get parts, it's my doing. If it's tight, it's my doing. I try to control. I mean, they do exist, believe me. But I've learned a long, 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 long time ago is you got to race these guys every single day. There's no use to having animosity, you know. Of course, there's going to be times you're going to be upset and things like that, but I just choose to just keep it to myself. And, you know, I'd rather be the guy that would say, okay, well, Aaron doesn't hurt me out there. I don't want to hurt him. You know, I think that really, really helps. And I don't care if you're, you know, Ronnie Wren Jr. or Frank Harris. You know what I mean? From the top to the bottom, I'm going to, you know what I mean? I'm going to try to mostly drive my horse to where my horse is and, you know, not take offense or anything like that to anything else.
Goals for the upcoming year, 2016, anything that you know, kind of have your eye set on?
I'm just, you know, continuing to get Grand Circuit drives, you know, in the summertime and, you know, spring and fall, you know, traveling with, you know, with the best horses and drivers and trainers in the sport. You know, like, especially with my location, you know, geographically, it's, you know, it's very, very surreal. And, I've had the opportunity to enjoy, you know, driving some nice horses in some big races here the last couple of years. And I like to continue to do that. You know, it's, you know, winning races never gets old, believe me, but, even finishing, you know, a nice check and those bigger races or ever, not even financially wise, just saying you give this horse a good trip and the horse raced well, and it was just a good show, you know. And I really just enjoy the sport, you know, and which I must, you know, I do it every day. It's not just necessarily a job to me. It's something that I want to excel at and do well.
Aaron, do you follow the thoroughbred side at all?
You know, I watch thoroughbreds periodically while I'm driving up and down the road. I do like it. Like I said, I'm a horse racing fan. If I would ever bet on a horse, I would be betting on thoroughbreds. That's for sure. Like when I'm driving up and down the road and I have a 4-hour drive to this place, I like watching. I've got my iPad in here. You know what I mean? I'll put my 5 across the board on some medium to long shot at thoroughbreds with a cool name or a number. But I do like the thoroughbreds a lot, actually.
Now that's interesting. When
I
you say
buy one.
When you say you would be betting, is that because you feel like the standard breds are less consistent, the thoroughbreds are more consistent, or it's just a difference in terms of the sport?
Well, one thing is if I ever want to bet on, I don't want to bet anything that I have anything that I don't ever want to be affiliated with betting on standard bred race ever.
Right, I get you. Yeah, the Pete Rose thing, sure.
Mike Collins, what it is? It's like all thoroughbred. So you know what I mean? I'll just like put $100 in there every once in a while, and it lasts a long time because I don't go on there very often, but. I just really enjoy watching thoroughbreds, you know, and like, you know, sometimes the bigger fields, you know, and the sometimes the purses are crazy, you know, and I mean, I just like horses. I really think horses are cool, and I'm afraid to ride horses actually, but so I commend those guys going that fast.
It's so funny that you say that because I've talked to some former jockeys recently and I've been thinking about getting up on a horse. And I'm the same way. It's like, well, first of all, you weigh 190. I'm like 215. I don't really want that fall, you know, and you're, I'm sure, a lot more skilled
right.
than I am. So it's like, cause I was asking, well, do they sense fear? It's like, yeah. It's like, well, crap. Now I'm really screwed, you know?
Right. I don't think they probably know I'm not afraid. It's just, it's not, like you said, I don't really want to fall off.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not my cup of tea that I do. So I'm sure I would like it, enjoy it if I was good at it, I'm sure.
Very good. Well, I won't keep you any longer, Aaron. I would feel, you know, terrible if there was a horrific car accident as we're, you know, doing the podcast here. So I want to thank you very much for being on the show. I wish you continued success in the future, and please come back.
Thanks, Ben. Very much. Nice meeting you.
All right. Take care, Aaron.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside, a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sick, salty.
I mean, you walk in that door on your two legs, all fat and cocky.
You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. So you've done 2 reps of water drinking. Usually we do 10 reps of everything, so do another rep of water drinking.
I'm now joined by Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. And Kevin, we have arrived at the big day, the Super Bowl. How are you feeling?
Wow, it's finally here, Derek. It's about time after it feels like all these weeks of leading up when, it's only been, 2 weeks since we saw the Panthers and the Broncos advance to the Super Bowl. So, it's finally good to get it, get the game going. And obviously it'll be sad to see football go for about 8 months or so. Actually, just the action. I mean, we'll have the draft and other stuff, in between. But, at least we'll have the two top seeds and there's a lot of storylines with this game. So it should be pretty fun.
Well, the Super Bowl is like the golden corral of sports betting. I have seen so many bets out there. In fact, I wrote an article, Kevin, about Lady Gaga and the national anthem. This is the contribution I'm making to the sports betting that's going on this weekend. But of course, there's bets on the coin flip, different games, betting whether Stephen Curry will have X number of three-pointers greater than the number of field goals in the game, or whatever the case may be. Let's start there. Are there any of these crazy prop bets that you think are worth betting? And if so, why? And by all means, which ones?
Well, I'll go first, Derek, with the no's. Basically, I think the coin flip one is ridiculous. I think the color of the Gatorade is ridiculous. I think some of them just, you have no mathematical edge. Like, how do you know what color the Gatorade is going to be like? I mean, there's just some of the props, and I understand that's the job of the odds makers is to put out all these ridiculous props. I just think that you're just guessing at some of them. So I really haven't dug as much into the game props, but I always enjoy the cross sport props. I think those are pretty fun because at least you get to have two things with basically two games. And I like the NBA cross sport props. You can find a lot of different, I think there's a lot of value you could find in these. And one of them that I stumbled upon that I think is, has got a chance to cash is Kevin Durant points -6.5. Against Peyton Manning completions. Now, the Thunder play the Warriors on Saturday night, so it should be a pretty high-scoring game at Golden State. That's a nationally televised game. It's kind of, the big NBA game Saturday night. And when you look at that, you can say, well, Peyton Manning, if he completed 40 passes, then Kevin Durant would need 47 points to cash that. The problem is, I look at Peyton Manning, I believe in his last 6 or 7 games, he hasn't completed more than 21 passes. So that's on the high side. And Kevin Durant, basically in his sleep, as long as he doesn't get hurt, can score 25, 30 points in any game just because he's that dynamic of a scorer. So I look at this, since Oklahoma City plays Saturday, and you'll know what you need going into Sunday, that if Kevin Durant scores 30 points against Golden State on Saturday, that means you need Peyton Manning to complete 23 passes or less to win that bet. And I just think that there is some value there in Durant because you know that he can score. I mean, if he put up 35 points, I think you're in really good shape. The only thing that would affect it is if the Broncos fell behind, but then I go on the flip side too, Derek, and I say, if they got down like 28-3 or something to Carolina and Peyton Manning's been terrible, maybe Brock Osweiler comes in, and then Peyton's done. So I just don't think that if they're getting destroyed in this game, that Peyton Manning's playing all 60 minutes. I just don't think that would be the case. So I think that's a pretty good bet.
Yeah, first of all, I agree with you on the coin flip stuff. I think if you're betting those, you need to call that gambling hotline and confess your sins because there's some deeper issues there. In terms of the prop, I like this too because on the second day, it gives you a chance to maybe hedge your bets a little bit too. As far as the game itself, now, of course, you know I'm a Broncos fan. I think the Cam Newton hype is out of control. I was doing a bunch of posts there for a while saying, you know, Cam Newton has figured out cold fusion and all because it seems like, you know, he can do everything. We've never seen anything like him. And this is no knock on Cam because I like Cam. I just think it's a little bit overblown. The game itself, though, you know, I want to believe and I think Denver's got a great defense to compete. I worry a little bit about Carolina and just the toughness that they bring. I think Denver can stand up to it defensively. I'm not sure offensively. You've been on a great roll in these playoffs. How do you see this game?
You know, I like your Broncos in this game, Derek, for a couple of reasons. One, you look at the defensive numbers. They're basically tops in the NFL across the board for the Broncos. They have standout players defensively. Not that Carolina doesn't, but when I see what Denver did with Tom Brady and just totally shutting down that New England offense for the most part until New England ended up getting that late touchdown. And I mean, Rob Gronkowski, you're not going to see on Carolina that he's a freak of nature. And that's not a guy that Denver's got to worry about this week. Peyton Manning. Yes, we know that his body's deteriorated. His numbers have deteriorated, but he's stepping up at the right time. So far in the playoffs, no turnovers, had the two touchdown passes against the Patriots last week, led them past Pittsburgh a few weeks ago in the divisional round. I understand that Ben Roethlisberger was hurt. Brady is not very nimble, and Cam Newton's a freak, that he is a guy that's hard to tackle, that basically it's almost like a one-man wrecking crew on that offense. So I understand there's a different dynamic that Denver's got to worry about with Cam Newton. But also on the flip side, when you look at what Carolina's defense has done, they remind me of New Orleans' defense a few years ago that beat Peyton Manning's Colts in the Super Bowl. They're very opportunistic. They had a lot of defensive touchdowns. They made a lot of things happen. If they don't make those things happen, if Peyton doesn't turn the ball over and the Broncos can keep Carolina's defense on the field and keep Cam off or at least make Cam work for the scoring drives, then I think that Denver's got a very good chance in this game. I look back at Carolina. They have one road win this year against a playoff team. Actually, let me take that back. They have one game on the road against a playoff team. It happened to be a win that was at Seattle. They were down 20-7. It was a really good win. They came back at the end. Cam Newton hit Greg Olsen for a touchdown pass in the closing minutes to give Carolina that win. But besides that, there are other road games. They played a bunch of teams that they should have beaten, and they did, with the exception of losing to Atlanta in Week 16. So Carolina really hasn't been tested. They're going cross-country, playing an unfamiliar stadium. Denver has not played a regular season game at Levi Stadium, but they have played a preseason game there. Take what you want from that, but at least you have some familiarity with that stadium, at least a little bit. And also, Derek, Peyton Manning's playing his fourth Super Bowl. This is the first time he's listed as an underdog in a Super Bowl. He's 1-2. Obviously, he wants to close out his career, assuming he's going to retire after this game, with a victory. And I think getting 6 points is very generous, simply because Carolina, they've jumped on a lot of these teams early. I'd like to see what Carolina could do if Denver got on top early and how Carolina would respond.
I think you raised some great points, Kevin. And one of the things I do when I bet horse races, typically I have an idea as to how the race is going to play out. So maybe I'm looking for a 24 opening quarter. I'm looking for a certain horse to be on the lead. And depending on what happens early, I have a pretty good idea as to whether I'm in good shape or if I'm in poor shape. As a viewer watching the Super Bowl, what should we be looking for? Now, you already mentioned one thing about Carolina not getting on top and how are they going to respond. Anything else that you think might be key to this game that we can find out early?
Well, I think, too, it's big plays. And I feel like I'm kind of stating the obvious, but at the same time, if it doesn't work out that way, where Carolina doesn't have big plays, we saw it against Seattle, in which they had the Jonathan Stewart long run on the first drive to put themselves into Seattle territory that kind of got them going, that I'm not seeing a lot of churning out drives with Carolina. We saw it against Arizona last week. Ted Ginn had, or 2 weeks ago, he had the 25-yard double reverse touchdown, Cam threw the ball down the sidelines, they got taken down 70 yards for a touchdown, that I'm very curious to see what Carolina can do, where really Cam doesn't have dynamic offensive talent around him. He's got good players. Greg Olsen was the second leading tight end this year in yardage in the NFL behind Rob Gronkowski. That's not a bad class to be in. He's very good there, but who's your standout wide receiver? Kelvin Benjamin, not playing because of his injury in the preseason. You have Ted Ginn, who has been a decent wide receiver in the NFL, not great, but who's going to be those guys to step up? Denver's got 2 1,000-yard receivers that Peyton Manning can go to. And, yeah, Peyton doesn't have the great numbers anymore, but Peyton is still smart. That's not saying that Cam Newton's not, but, you know, your talent can only take you so far. And does Cam have that talent around him? I just can't see Cam putting up against this defense a Vince Young-type championship effort like in the Rose Bowl against USC years ago, where he's just going to carry the team on his back and do everything. I can't see where he's going to do that. It's just too hard on this level to just do everything yourself. And I think that Peyton's got more help around him offensively. And you know what? If Carolina wins this game by 3, all right. I just think that the focus is too much on Carolina here. And for Denver with a quarterback that's got a lot to play for, not that Cam doesn't, but we all know that Peyton could be on his way out and has great preparation towards these games at 2 weeks to prepare for this. Both the coaches are pretty even, I think, so there's no real advantages there. That I think just taking the points is a really good look.
I got to tell you, Kevin, you've convinced me because, you know, I try, obviously, I don't even like betting games where I have a rooting interest. But on the surface, so much of what you say resonates because I think that's what's always missed in gambling. It's not always about, you know, finding, well, we've talked before about so many times in sports, it's true of horse racing, it's true in the NFL. People look at those last few games, last few efforts, and that's how they make their judgments. If you look on the whole here, and I remember when Seattle faced Denver and thinking that Seattle defense could contain Denver, I have seen Cam Newton play repeatedly against Seattle. They never scored a lot of points because it was a completely different type of scenario. You might get that scenario in the Super Bowl. Anyway, I know you've got to run, so I really appreciate you making the time. Thanks again for all the picks throughout the NFL season. It's been a great run in the playoffs, and hopefully we'll keep it going in the Super Bowl.
Thank you so much, Derek.
All right, take care.